This is Morning Edition from NHPR. The heightened public awareness around sexual harassment in Hollywood, the media, and national politics has started to trickle down to the local level, including state legislatures. While New Hampshire has not seen the kind of high-profile cases that have started to appear in other state capitals, NHPR reporter Casey McDermott talked to many people who work around the Statehouse who say harassment is a day-to-day problem. And she joins us now to talk more about that reporting. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Rick.
So what made you decide to look into this, Casey?
So obviously there's been kind of a groundswell of public conversation around sexual harassment and specifically sexual harassment as it relates to people's workplaces. We've seen this kind of burgeoning Me Too movement of people speaking up about their experiences in lots of professions, including politics. And I can say just anecdotally, you know, I've been in New Hampshire for about 3 years working around the State House. I've heard a number of just, you know, casual stories from people about their own kind of uncomfortable interactions that they've had in that setting. Obviously, that on its own is not enough for a story, but I figured that there was enough there to at least start asking people more broadly, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences?
The legislature, I know, is interesting because it's not, you know, it's not a normal workplace. How does that shape the experiences that you heard about?
Yeah, and I think that's a really critical component of this. So the State House is unique in that a lot of the people who are there during its peak business hours are not actually employees of the institution. And it's a largely self-policing institution. People kind of, you know, deal with things by maybe talking to someone or taking other steps as needed, but rarely does anything rise to the level of like a public hearing or a disciplinary measure.
It's not the same as getting called into the boss's office.
Exactly.
Yeah, or the supervisor. So what did you find out when you started digging?
So as part of my reporting, as you would expect, I asked the House and the Senate for any records that they had related to sexual harassment. And what I found was that there are incidents that are reported. Now, the House turned over a number of records. There have been about 10 incidents that have risen to the level of, you know, an actual complaint or something that would be documented over the last 2 years, incidents that kind of spanned a broad spectrum of different types of harassment in the House, most of which, again, were dealt with informally, documented in case they escalated in the future. Now, the Senate was significantly less responsive in terms of turning over documents. The paper trail they did provide raised some additional questions that are worth looking into further, though. They held back a number of documents citing attorney-client privilege and personnel exemptions, but the records they did provide showed that the Senate paid more than $4,000 to a law firm that specializes in sexual harassment complaints for services that were utilized in 2013 and 2014. But the Senate wouldn't say what those services were, whether they were related to any specific incident or whether that incident was resolved.
And so who else did you talk to in your reporting?
So I spent a lot of time just talking to people who I knew spent a lot of time at the State House. So that included people who work as lobbyists, people who work as lawmakers, some staffers, and just kind of tried to amass a sense of, okay, can you paint me a portrait of what it is like for you day in, day out? I will say that most of my conversations were with women, but I do want to acknowledge that this is an issue that affects both men and women.
And what were some of the things they were describing?
So some people said they never had anything that they would consider to be sexual harassment. But a number of other people described basically a pattern of kind of casual sexism, sexual innuendo, unwanted advances from mostly male lawmakers. You know, for example, one lobbyist told me that after a committee vote, a legislator came up to her in the hallway, kind of caressed her arm and whispered in her ear, you changed my mind. And that interaction made that person feel very uncomfortable. Another lobbyist told me that in another case, she and a colleague were passing out policy literature. They encountered a group of male lawmakers, and one of the men invited the two young women to join them on a boat trip in their bikinis. So, you know, that kind of interaction in a professional setting is really kind of crossing a line.
And but especially when you have that power imbalance.
Exactly.
You have a lobbyist who is relying on these legislatures basically for their livelihood.
Yes. Yeah. And that goes for lobbyists. That goes for, you know, for example, junior lawmakers. It's an institution in which the kind of inherent power dynamics really can make it difficult for people to speak up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm wondering about the culture here. Did you talk to people who were saying, you know, this is just part of the day-to-day, this is part of the wallpaper here in the legislature, and this is just the way things are, and this is the way you have to deal with it?
What's interesting was that a lot of the conversations I had, there was a little bit of a generational line, in that some people said that, you know, for a while they've been working in Concord, and they've experienced things that at the time they didn't necessarily consider harassment, but now looking back on it with the kind of context of the conversation that we're having now about how seemingly minor incidents can have an effect on someone's sense of security or sense of just ability to do their work, they were reevaluating experiences that they had years ago in light of that. So that's all to say that I think that this is something that people acknowledge is an issue, just in terms of it's something that's not really openly talked about, and that sometimes allows these, again, seemingly minor verbal or otherwise incidents to continue and have an effect on a lot of people.
Does anything seem to be changing with this new attention that's being paid now?
Yeah. So one really interesting interview I had was with the team at New Futures. And they're interesting because they're a predominantly female lobbying team, and they have a lot of different generations in their workplace. So what CEO Linda Saunders-Paquette told me was that they've been having kind of a more open dialogue in light of the Me Too movement and just talking about their own experiences in the context of lobbying in the legislative environment in Concord. And that because they've started to have a more open conversation in their office about the incident that they've experienced in the course of their work, they're actually going to take steps to be more, to make sure that their staffers feel empowered to speak up about these incidents and document them as they happen.
So you've been reporting on this for a while now, Casey. What's next in your reporting?
So we're going to continue to try to get answers out of the legislature about those records that they might be holding back right now. But we also want to keep talking to people about their experiences with harassment in the workplace, whether that's at the State House or whether that's in any other industry, because we know this happens in a lot of different environments. But if someone does have a story that they want to share, they can either reach out to me directly or through a form that we've set up and posted online at nhpr.org.
And HPR reporter Casey McDermott, she's been covering what's happening in New Hampshire's State House and talking about sexual harassment within the legislature. Thanks so much, Casey.
Thanks, Rick.